From Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, I'm Suzette Grelot, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma, and welcome to Worldviews. I've been traveling through South America for the past 2 weeks, and today I'll talk about Argentina's history and current political situation with Grady Ray. He's a Spanish professor who leads OU's study abroad program in Buenos Aires.
I think they are uneasy right now, because they've had a rather good term here for the last 12 years.
Then Rebecca Cruz joins me for our annual preview of the Oscar nominees for Best Foreign Language Film. The 2016 Academy Awards are this Sunday.
What's so remarkable about this film is it really does give us that clear image of the actual process, the mechanics involved in a concentration camp like Auschwitz.
That's all coming up right after this hour's news headlines. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Grelot. Grady Ray, we are here together in Buenos Aires, Argentina. Welcome to the roundtable.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, Grady, you're living in Buenos Aires right now, teaching OU students here for the semester. And I'm traveling through with some alums, and so we got together, had lunch, and I just wanted to kind of follow up with you about some of the interesting things we're experiencing in Argentina. But first, kind of, you know, refresh our memories a little bit. The history of Argentina is very, very interesting, but just a quick little snippet of, you know, recent history. They haven't been a democratic country for very long. They had dictatorship for many years. And so they're now going through some additional transition, political transition. We're going to talk about that in a second. But kind of give us a little refresher, I guess, on Argentine history.
Well, there was quite a bit of a problem with the dictatorship in the 70s and 80s. And then we had more of the 90s where democracy kind of came back again. And then one of the major problems that was difficult for the Argentine people was the financial crisis of 2000 and 2001. And at that point, there were several different presidents that came through in a 2 or 3 year period. And finally, Néstor Kirchner was elected president. And he had a long term and started doing more socialist things in the country. And then Cristina Fernández de Kirchner, his wife, was elected, and she served 2 terms and just completed her 2nd term last year at the end of 2015. And now we have a new president in Argentina, and he's just been president for about 2 months. His name is Mauricio Macri, and he is not part of the Kirchner ruling party that just ended the term. And so right now we're wondering what types of changes are going to be happening in Argentina under his presidency, which is a switch of parties.
So the issue aside of like wives following their husbands into office here, it's kind of interesting, taking us back to the days of Perón and others who've done this. But, you know, you were telling me earlier the Kirchners were both politicians of their own right. So the fact that he was elected and then she was elected to 2 terms is really pretty interesting of the kind of, I don't know, legacy, I guess, of the Kirchner family here in Argentina. But you mentioned the political transition. I mean, this is, again, kind of, you know, new. But what's really interesting now is the economic situation. You mentioned the economic crisis and kind of how Argentina is going to be able to grow and develop. I mean, this is a very, from my just perception of being here right now, very vibrant country, really energetic. People are very passionate, and certainly about politics and economics when you start talking about these things. But what do we think about the future? I mean, I know some of this is just kind of looking into the crystal ball, but you mentioned the transition, you mentioned this new president. I mean, they're starting to kind of come back into the fold of the neoliberal economic, you know, Western world, I guess, for lack of a better way of putting it?
Well, yes. Neoliberalism, I think, is coming back to Argentina right now because of Macri, the new president, where the Kirchners were much more socialist and chose not to have more of the neoliberal policies that had been in Latin America for quite a while. So right now, we're going to have to see about that. Congress has not reconvened yet. And since Macri has been president only for about 2 months, he has tried to do some things here without congressional approval yet. Not because he's had to have the congressional approval, but it's just that he's said some things that now will have to be approved by Congress. And so that's why it's still unsure about what's going on. There was a lot of state-owned corporations and things, such as the airlines and such as the petroleum industry, which we don't know whether Macri now will continue that type of ownership by the state or whether he will want to privatize that. So that's some of the stuff that's going to be coming through. But again, the population has to be in agreement with this. It is a democracy and Congress has to approve this. And just because the Kirchners have been out of power now for 2 months doesn't mean that they've lost the Congress. And Argentina tends to be somewhat conservative in the Buenos Aires area. But in the provinces, it tends to be much more liberal and more socialist. And so since the Buenos Aires is going to want to have a lot of more conservative issues, doesn't mean that that's going to be the same in the provinces.
Well, it does sound like we've got some division in the country still, that there's really not a lot of agreement. So I guess, are you hopeful? Do you think that Argentinians are hopeful about the future?
I think they are uneasy right now because they've had a rather good term here for the last 12 years for most Argentines. Now, some Argentines were completely against the Kirchners and didn't want them to be in office at all. But overall, I think most Argentinians were living better under those terms. Now those that were living better are worried as to whether or not some of those social policies that were helpful to them are going to be good or not. And so that's what we have to keep our eye on.
All right. That jury is still out. Thank you so much, Grady, for being here with me today, and enjoy the rest of your time in Buenos Aires.
It's been my pleasure.
If you have any questions or comments about this discussion, let us know online at kgou.org. We're also on Facebook, and you can tweet us at WorldviewsKGOU. You can find me on Twitter at Suzek Rilat. All of our past segments and episodes are also online, and you can have them delivered to you directly by subscribing to our podcast. Next, Rebecca Cruz joins me for one of our favorite conversations of the year, our annual look at the nominees for Best Foreign Language Film at Sunday's Academy Awards. I'm Suzek Rilat, and this is Worldviews. Rebecca Cruz, it's our favorite time of year, the Oscar show, where we review the nominees for the best foreign film this year. I just want to say very quickly, there's going to be some noise in the background. I'm calling in from Brazil. I'm at Iguazu Falls, and so there are the falls in the background, and the breeze in the jungle, and helicopters flying overhead. So not a better place to talk about our films this year, especially when one of them is set in the Amazon, Embrace of the Serpent. It's a Colombian film and focuses on medical expeditions and the impact of colonization. How do you feel about this film?
It's very interesting. It's visually different because it's in black and white, which obviously is an artistic choice, but really adds to the feel. It's about two expeditions that are led by the same indigenous person, an expedition in the early 1900s and then in 1940. And so you really do get a feel of how things have changed, how not just these medical folks coming in, but the colonizers coming in and other people coming in and changing the lifestyle. As I said, an artistic choice. There is a splash of color that comes in. So this made me think a little bit about Schindler's List, you know, that black and white, and then you have the spark of color. So those that are able to see this film will definitely want to look for that. And this is also interesting because this is Colombia's first nomination in this category. Of course, countries are asked to send in their films that they want to be considered. I think there were 81 this year, which was two down from the record that was set last year. So 81 countries sent in their films, and then that's whittled down into a kind of a short, long list of about nine. And then there's the five that are selected to be nominated. And so this is Colombia's first time being nominated in this category, which is very nice and speaks highly of this film.
Well, I like the black and white version because, like last year's winner, Ida, that was also black and white. So this one may be, again, another artistic choice. Well, let's talk about the film from France, the film called Mustang.
Eğer beni ondan başka biriyle evlendirmeye kalkarsan, çığlığı basarım. Ne diyorsun?
Some people think it might actually overtake the front runner, which is Son of Saul. We'll talk about it next. But this movie, Mustang, is set in rural Turkey. It's actually about women in the Muslim world, five sisters, their ordeals, and involves, in fact, some really troubling issues like suicide and the like. What do you make of this film?
Well, I think that there are a couple of trends from the films this year, and violence and war is certainly one of them. We're not necessarily seeing war in this case, but we are seeing violence. These five girls, they are orphaned and are being raised by, I believe, a grandmother and an uncle, and it's how they are treated in terms of finding them spouses, kind of selling them off. And so in some regards could be considered domestic violence. And so that is one of those themes. It is about Turkey, as you mentioned, though it's been submitted by France. And the director is Turkish. And this is what's interesting. It's a woman. There is a female director nominated in this category, which is more than we can say for an Oscar for Best Director. So we do have a little bit of diversity here in gender with her being nominated. And what I find somewhat remarkable is she happens to be 37, which is my age, and she was born in Turkey. So she's been very successful. And this is quite the feather in her cap. And yeah, it might be the sleeper that could win this year.
Well, we'll get to the diversity issue here in just a second, Rebecca, because we can't help but talk about the issues of diversity or lack thereof at the Oscars this year. This is the second, third year in a row that this has become a big issue. But let's talk about a couple more of these films. There's Thieb from Jordan. Somewhat of a kind of a retelling of the Lawrence of Arabia film, kind of from the perspective of Arab nationalists, but involves two brothers going out on an expedition. Some have even referred to this film as kind of an Arab Western, but they're out on a scouting mission, and one of them dies, and the other has to kind of recover and make his way back. So what do you think about the possibility of Thieb being our winner this year?
Well, probably not the winner. It has gotten a lot of acclaim, obviously. It's Jordan's first nomination as well. So both Jordan and Columbia, first nominations this year in that short list of five. And it is being compared to Lawrence of Arabia in large part because of the time frame, but also because it takes place in the desert. So those sweeping pictures that you see in Lawrence of Arabia that really made that film so remarkable, you see some of that here, really see the vastness of the desert, the difficulties of trying to survive in the desert. And I think that's also why it's being compared to a Western, kind of that isolation that one feels. And then to really get the view of this from the two brothers and then the younger brother that survives, just remarkable kind of human story that we're getting here. But again, this idea of violence comes up. This takes place during World War I. And so the war of violence and the heartaches that leads to and how that is affecting these two young boys.
I'm talking with Rebecca Cruz about the 2016 Academy Award nominees for Best Foreign Language Film. We'll pick this conversation back up right after a short break. I'm Suzette Gorlott, and this is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Gorlott. I'm talking with Rebecca Cruz this half hour about the five movies nominated for the 2016 Academy Award for Best Foreign Language Film. The Oscar ceremony is this Sunday night, and you can watch the trailers for these films online at kgou.org. Well, so on to the next film about war, also a film called A War. It's a Danish film about a commander in Afghanistan who's accused of an attack on civilians, or at least authorizing an attack where many civilians are killed and injured. And so he endures this military tribunal.
Jeg havde en stærk formodning om, at der befandt Taliban inde i
kampen. Stopper lige der, Claus. Havde du piger lige?
As a Danish film, of course, the Danish have been quite successful in this category, but what do you make of this film?
This is interesting. This is perhaps a reminder that the United States has not endured the Afghan war alone or our involvement in Afghanistan. Dozens of countries are involved in this, and obviously that's been going on now 14 and a half years. So perhaps a reminder to us that our allies have been dealing with this as well. And Denmark has actually been the country that per capita has suffered the most losses in Afghanistan. So it's been very difficult for that country. As you said, this is about a tribunal, but even more than that, it's about the tolls that war has taken on the family members. So this gentleman goes to Afghanistan, his family is left behind. behind. He has a wife, children, and then comes back and has the trial, and how that really just eats away at their family unit, the difficulties that they struggle through. I think the other thing that's interesting here is that it is about the killing of some innocent lives, but the Danish standard for these sorts of situations is much higher than you might see elsewhere. Certainly in the United States, there is an attack on his soldiers, and he makes a decision to bring in some artillery from above, and there are casualties there. In this sort of situation, it's unclear but unlikely that a U.S. battalion would have faced, or a U.S. soldier would have faced, the same scrutiny that this gentleman is facing. So also gives us an indication of the differences in how militaries operate and how they perhaps deal with these sorts of situations when they come under attack, and how that's perceived back home.
All right, well, let's talk about the front runner then, Hungary, the Hungarian film, Son of Saul. Now, this film has already been recognized as the best foreign film of the year at Cannes. It's also won the Golden Globe. It is quite controversial, though, and it deals with a subject that many people aren't even very aware of. This group of Sonderkommandos who were taking care, they were prisoners at Auschwitz. So the film is set in Auschwitz-Birkenau, and they were those who were kind of taking care of the dead Jews and what happened in that case. So tell us a little bit about the history of that, if you would, and what do you make of this Hungarian film?
Yeah, there's never a shortage of World War II films. In fact, the winner last year was about World War II, and other nominees were as well. But this one, as you say, takes on a kind of a different angle that is really quite effective and really very, very disturbing. These Sonderkommandos were Jews that were taken either by force or given the option to clean up the ashes and dispose of the ashes or bodies after people were taken into the gas chambers in Auschwitz and in other concentration camps. And so you can imagine the psychological damage that this would do to those individuals, and the ostracization that they would feel within the camps also is kind of becoming dirty and killing of their own people, if you will. So very, very difficult. And in most cases, this did not mean that they survived. This was just a stay of their own executions. So a very difficult situation. And what's so remarkable about this film is it really does give us that clear image of the actual process, the mechanics involved in a concentration camp like Auschwitz, the coming off the trains, the leading to the different facilities, the going through the showers, the disposing of the bodies. We see the entire process. In this particular case, we follow this this gentleman, Saul, and he's gone a little bit delusional, is not a surprise. And there is a young boy, apparently, that survives for a brief time. And Saul starts to see him as his son. Whether he really is or isn't is somewhat left to the viewer. He probably isn't. But Saul then determines that he needs to provide this child with a proper burial. And so he goes on in search of a rabbi within the camp. So that's one aspect. And then there's this other kind of subplot that comes out where the Sonderkommandos begin to realize that they are next. And there is a bit of a revolt that takes place. And so I don't want to spoil it too much, but we begin to see how those activities within the camp evolve. And so that's quite a bit different than some of the other World War II films that we've seen, and certainly a very deep and dark, yet very important image for us to really understand what World War II was and what the situation in these places was.
Well, back to this issue of diversity, Rebecca, now that we've reviewed all the films and the countries that they're from. As you mentioned, 81 films submitted this year, 5 selected. There's some notable films that didn't make the cut that received a lot of attention, a Chinese film, Icelandic film, a Chilean film, in fact. But we have 3 European nominees, 1 South American, 1 Middle Eastern, no Asian, no African. So, you know, once again, we've got some issues coming up about the diversity here.
Well, and actually, if we go back to that kind of short, long list of 9, there was even less diversity. That was almost the majority was European. So we had 5 European films and then these others that were sprinkled. So once it went to the short list, there actually seemed to be an increase in diversity. And perhaps that came about because of some of the discussion that's taken place in this country about diversity of the Oscars in general. You know, the lack of diversity in terms of director, best film, and some of those other issues that we've heard a great deal about here. But yes, Asia was blocked out. Africa was blocked out. And Australia as well. And you mentioned Chile there too. So not a lot of diversity there. I did mention that we did have Denise Erguin from Turkey representing France. So we did at least have a female director in one of the films. And some diversity, I suppose, in terms of the themes that we're looking at, though again, it does seem to focus on violence and war in kind of writ large.
So of those that didn't make the cut then, Rebecca, there were a couple of notable ones.
Well, yeah, there were some notable ones and some ones that stuck out to me. I'm not sure whether it should have made the cut or not, but it's interesting that Paraguay, you're kind of in that part of the world right now, they actually submitted their first candidate for consideration. Now, it didn't make the list, but Cloudy Times from Paraguay, so that's worth mentioning that they have kind of entered that arena. And another one that I personally found interesting, and which was on the short long list, and perhaps for my own interest from Germany, is another kind of World War II film called Labyrinth of Lies that looks at an interesting part of German history where they actually took the German commanders from Auschwitz and took them to trial. And the process that takes place here, again, a true story of a kind of a young idealistic prosecutor that really pushes to have those people brought to trial. They had kind of been back into German society, and that was something that needed to take place for Germany to move forward. We're much more familiar with the Nuremberg trials and a couple of others, but the Frankfurt Auschwitz trials are the focus of that movie. And so those that might be interested in Son of Saul are probably also going to be interested in this German film Labyrinth of Lies, as it kind of ties to that story.
Well, do you have any predictions? I mean, it seems to be that the front runners, the Golden Globe winners, the Cannes winners, they seem to stick out in front. But last year's winner was a bit of a sleeper. So how are we feeling this year about predictions? I'm frankly going to go with Mustang and the French film.
Well, personally, I think I'd like to see Mustang win. I like the themes that it's dealing with. But it does seem to be, hands down, that Son of Saul is going to be the winner. But Oscar sometimes switches things up. So we'll have to see what happens. I wouldn't necessarily put money against Son of Saul, though.
Well, I guess we'll find out on Sunday. And thanks, everyone, for tolerating all the noise out here. I'm on the Brazilian border with Argentina at Iguazu Falls with OU alums, and still calling in and talking about film.
Well, we appreciate your dedication, Suzette.
You've been listening to my conversation with Rebecca Cruz about the 5 nominees for Best Foreign Language Film at Sunday's Academy Awards. We have the trailers on our website, kgou.org. Worldviews is a collaborative partnership between KGOU and the University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies. Brian Hardzinski produces the show and oversees our digital content. For Grady Ray and Rebecca Cruz, I'm Suzette Corlott.